Welcome to Voicing Our Values, a series of podcasts about progressive message framing. This is the 10th segment entitled How to Talk About Public Safety. I'm Bernie Horn, the Senior Director for Policy and Communications at the Public Leadership Institute, a nonpartisan nonprofit organization that seeks to help progressive lawmakers and advocates, particularly at the state and local levels of government. Please take some time to look around our website, www.publicleadershipinstitute.org. In addition to the Voicing Our Values messaging handbook, you'll find the Progressive Agenda, which contains hundreds of policy ideas and more than 150 model bills, our handbook for policy advocates called Preparing to Win, and much more. In our last podcast, number 9, we explained how to talk about healthcare in a way to get around the problem of confirmation bias that we explained in podcast 1. To persuade, you need to understand your audience's preconceptions and where you share common ground. To avoid triggering negative emotional responses and confirmation bias, you must start from a point of agreement and provide voters with a bridge from their preconceptions to your solutions. Along the way, show that your policies are consistent with values that they already hold dear and explain how they benefit. All this is designed to remind your listeners over and over again that you are on their side. The question now is, how do we apply this when talking about public safety? Over the years, we progressives have been attacked by the right wing, quite effectively, as impractical bleeding hearts. We've been attacked as favoring criminal offenders more than we favor the victims of crime. Am I right? So, let me say right at the top of the podcast what progressives must do. When you're talking about crime, you must tell voters how your policies will make them safer, not how they benefit the perpetrator or suspect. I promise you, you won't have to water down your beliefs at all. Just start with beliefs and values that we share with all our listeners. So how do we do that? As we told you in podcast 2, begin any argument in agreement with your audience. When talking about public safety, you should say something like this. The most basic job of our city or county or state is to keep you safe from crime. Now, think about it. It's true. And if you say it, nobody is going to disagree with you. Of course, progressives want to defend the rights of all, including those suspected of committing crimes. Just don't start the conversation there. And what are our progressive values when it comes to public safety? Well, they're security, safety, protection, responsibility, and justice. So with that in mind, what's a progressive vision for government when it comes to public safety? How about something like this? The most fundamental job of government is to protect its citizens from crime. Progressive government focuses on strategies that make us safer, and serious felonies deserve serious punishment. But there's a great deal that can be done to prevent crime while also ensuring justice. First, we should reform police procedures, including interrogations and the use of force, that lead authorities toward the wrong suspects. Two, we should reform judicial procedures that hurt the innocent, thereby helping the guilty. Three, we should reform prison procedures that increase recidivism. And four, we should reform criminal laws to prevent the commission of crimes. So why am I saying that we should talk that way? Persuadable voters want to know how your criminal justice policies will protect them. It shouldn't be hard for you to explain, because that's what all good progressive criminal justice policies accomplish. They prevent crime. They reduce recidivism. They improve the quality of life for everyone in the community. Conversely, right-wing policies, like giving long prison sentences to nonviolent drug offenders, take hundreds of millions of dollars away from strategies that more effectively fight drug abuse and prevent crime. That's what you need to put across. Our policies protect your listeners, while the right-wing policies do not. Here's a sample narrative, something you could say. It's a fundamental job of government to protect you from crime, to make law-abiding people safer. For dangerous felons, lock them up for a long time. But for nonviolent and young offenders, we need to do everything we can to divert them away from a life of crime. For example, nonviolent drug offenders sentenced to treatment facilities instead of regular prisons are far less likely to commit future crimes. And that's the goal, to make all of us safer and more secure. Again, why this kind of narrative? Because everyone wants safer communities. But what if the progressive policy is specifically about the rights of the accused? And that happens. For example, policies to require electronic recording of interrogations, to reform police procedures for lineups, to create commissions to research whether imprisoned people are actually innocent. Emphasize that for every wrongly convicted person, there's an actual perpetrator who has escaped justice and remains a threat to our public safety. Don't blame the police, but suggest that there are modern practices that have been proven to work better than current police procedures. Say that we owe it to the victim, as well as the whole community, to find and punish the real criminal. For example, let's say you're talking about this particular bill. The whole point of this legislation is to protect you from crime. A lot of other jurisdictions get better evidence from suspects and witnesses by requiring that all police questioning be electronically recorded. It protects the innocent and makes it easier to convict the guilty. Technology has changed rapidly, and we should take advantage of it. Let's move to a key area in public safety, gun violence prevention. Persuadable Americans know almost nothing about gun laws, and they have no idea how easy it is for dangerous people to buy firearms. When asked about gun policies, they overwhelmingly support background checks and other modest gun laws. In fact, many Americans think such policies are and always have been part of the law. Pro-gun advocates know that they lose the argument on the merits, so their tactic is to sidetrack the discussion. In a debate over guns, prepare to spend most of your time trying to steer the conversation back to the specific proposal at hand. I'll give examples in a minute, but first let's talk about some language to use and to avoid. Don't say gun control or stricter gun laws, and don't say that you oppose the Second Amendment or even imply it. Instead, you want to say that you want to prevent gun violence, that you want stronger gun laws, that you support the Second Amendment, and that such support goes hand in hand with keeping guns out of the hands of dangerous people. Why is that? Well, the National Rifle Association has done an effective job of making people associate the words gun control or even stricter laws with confiscating guns or banning handguns entirely. Of course, no one's proposing that. You need to make it clear that you're advocating for what voters perceive as a moderate position. Like them, you support the Second Amendment, and like them, you don't have a problem with NRA members in your community. Incidentally, if the situation requires you to attack the NRA, then condemn NRA lobbyists or NRA's out-of-touch leaders. Never, ever attack average NRA members or local NRA leaders. That's just not going to work for you. So, to introduce your gun violence argument, start with the fundamentals, something like this. We need to do everything we can to keep our community safe and secure from violence. But every day, far too many of us are victims of gun violence. Dozens of Americans will be murdered. Hundreds of others will be shot. And about 1,000 will be robbed or assaulted with a gun today. Now, if you can, tell a personal story here, because personal stories really work well when you're talking about gun violence. But why start this way? You don't want to skip the universally shared values that we're fighting for, safety and security. And then don't ignore the fundamental facts that motivate us. There are more than 10,000 gun murders, 100,000 people shot, and 400,000 Americans robbed or assaulted with firearms every single year. Let people recognize that every day, wherever you go in America, we're all at risk of gun violence. And then move on to something like this. It's obvious why many people are killed or victimized with guns day after day. We have some of the weakest gun laws in the world. To make us, our families, and our communities safer, we need to change a few of those laws right now. Why are you going that direction? Well, first of all, don't assume that people understand why we need new laws. You have to link the problem to the solution. If you're arguing for background checks for all guns, which is, you know, very common argument in public policy, you want to say something like this. Our community can't be safe if we allow guns to be sold to felons or the dangerously mentally ill. That's why current law requires that no gun can be sold by a licensed gun dealer without a current background check. But millions of guns are sold by unlicensed sellers at gun shows and through internet sites with no background check. We need a simple change in the law in order to cover all gun sales. The few minutes it takes to complete a computerized check will save lives. It's just common sense. So let me explain. Since 1968, federal law has banned the possession of firearms by convicted felons, domestic abusers, and people who are dangerously mentally ill. The Brady Law, enacted in 1993, requires a criminal background check before any licensed dealer can sell any firearm. And, FYI, about half of the states require more than that. The National Instant Criminal Background Check System, NICS, for gun purchases, which is operated by the FBI, began in 1998. Poll after poll shows that Americans overwhelmingly support background checks for all gun sales. The only direct argument against background checks by the pro-gun lobby is that, quote, criminals will get guns anyway, unquote. In response, say something like this. The federal background check law has blocked millions of illegal gun sales. It works. The problem is that the law doesn't apply to private sales, so felons can currently avoid background checks and get any kind of gun they want, no questions asked. It's time to close the private sale loophole. Why you say it that way? Well, nobody suggests that this law is going to stop all criminals. That makes no sense. But to be successful, the law doesn't have to. There's no law that stops all crime. It's simple common sense to block as many illegal sales as possible. All the other arguments raised in this debate, other than that one, are not designed to respond to the merits of the bill. They were designed to change the subject. Now, let me give you a few examples of that. So the right-wing argument would be the Second Amendment forbids the proposed gun law. And you respond, I support the Second Amendment. In fact, the Supreme Court ruled just a few years ago that reasonable gun laws are constitutional. And since then, other federal and state courts have consistently ruled that gun laws like the one we're talking about does not violate the Second Amendment. So let's return to the real issue. It's just plain common sense to require background checks for all gun purchases. Why shouldn't we do that? Now, let me explain that a little bit. In 2008, the Supreme Court ruled in District of Columbia v. Heller that Americans have the right to have a handgun in the home for self-protection. And that's all they really ruled. The court said, quote, "Nothing in our opinion should be taken to cast doubt on longstanding prohibitions on the possession of firearms by felons and the mentally ill, or laws forbidding the carrying of firearms in sensitive places such as schools and government buildings, or laws imposing conditions and qualifications on the commercial sale of arms." That ruling also explicitly reaffirmed the Supreme Court's prior ruling in U.S. v. Miller, an opinion that upheld a ban on sawed-off shotguns, and that's the same law that bans machine guns, silencers, grenades, bombs, and the like. So the Supreme Court has already ruled that the Second Amendment allows considerable regulation of guns. Here's another right-wing argument. The assault weapon law wouldn't have stopped the Newtown massacre or any other particular gun massacre. You respond, the goal of public safety legislation is to protect citizens. But no law is 100% effective. The law against murder doesn't stop all murders. The law that lowered blood alcohol level for driving didn't stop all drunk driving. This policy will not stop every gun crime, but it will save some lives. That's what we should be talking about. Why not adopt that law? Another right-wing argument. This law will give the federal government the data to create a gun registration list, and that'll lead to them taking our guns away. Now, this is just crazy, but it's a very common argument. So respond, the goal of this legislation is to protect citizens, and it will do that. There's nothing in the background check proposal that creates a registry. In fact, existing law forbids the federal government from establishing a gun registration list. Let's return to the real issue. This legislation would require background checks for all gun purchases, and that's just simple common sense. Why shouldn't we do that? Another right-wing argument. We should provide armed guards, or do something about mental health, or make parents take responsibility, or ban violent video games instead of the law that we're trying to pass here. You should respond, we should make our communities safer. If you've got a good proposal, that's fine. But this is not an either-or debate. One policy does not exclude another. Can we get back to the legislation on the table? Why should we sell these guns to any adult without any background check, no questions asked? I'll make one last right-wing argument. The only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. This is insane, but that's not your answer. Respond, we want to make a public policy that makes our communities safer. Unfortunately, your, quote, good guy with a gun, unquote, story doesn't work in real life. Columbine High School had an armed deputy sheriff. Virginia Tech had an entire police force, including a SWAT team. At the Tucson shooting, not only was there an armed civilian who failed to stop the shooter, but he almost shot one of the brave unarmed people who tackled and disarmed the shooter. The Fort Hood massacre happened at a military base filled with soldiers. President Reagan and his press secretary, Jim Brady, were surrounded by police and Secret Service, and yet both of them were shot. Let's get back to the real debate. And not the phony one. How are we going to make our country safer from gun violence? For more specific ways to answer right-wing arguments on public policy in general, or gun violence protection in particular, please refer to our book, Voicing Our Values, available on the PLI website. In future podcasts, we'll show how to use our five basic rules of persuasion to debate many other issues. In the meantime, do us a favor and recommend the Voicing Our Values series of podcasts to your friends. Best to you.